Welcome to the shadows. Old stories line the shelves of our dusty archives. Stories of dreams, mystery, horror. We would like to bring one of our early radio tales back to life during this half hour. Let's see. Here's an alcove marked for madmen only. Shall we see what it holds? Maupassant, Kafka, H.P. Lovecraft. Nikolai Gogol. A diary. Diary of a madman. Published in 1835. That was long before madness could have been diagnosed by psychiatry. Would he have been cured, I wonder? I see his story is a little too long for just one visit, but you can come back next time and hear the rest. Well, shall we listen?
October the 3rd. An extraordinary thing happened today. First of all, I got up rather late.
Here are your boots, sir.
Marva. What time is it?
Just 10 o'clock, sir.
10 o'clock? Impossible. I heard the clock strike 10 hours ago. Hours ago.
Yes, sir. Just 10, sir.
Oh, I must say, I'd as soon have skipped the office altogether. Altogether. That chief of my division. Oh, the way he treats
Tell me, my good man, why is it you're always in such a muddle? You dart around like a hen on a hot griddle and get your work in such a mess the devil himself couldn't straighten it out. It's just like you to start a new heading with a small letter. Look at that. You've no date, no reference number. You're muddle-headed. Muddle-headed.
This is old Crane. I know what it is, too. He envies me. He envies me. He envies me because I sit in the director's office and sharpen his quill. Oh, if it weren't for the prestige, I really would have left that apartment long ago. Well, it was pouring. So I wore my old overcoat and took an umbrella and hurried along the avenue.
Come on. Look, there at the carriage. Just stopped in front of the store. Don't you recognize it?
It's the director.
Yes.
But what can he possibly need here?
It must be his daughter.
His daughter. Oh, quick, against the wall. Oh, look at her fluttering out of the cage. Like a bird, like a bird. Oh, God, I'm lost.
Lost.
Quick, hide.
Why?
She'll recognize your coat.
What about my coat?
Oh, it's stained and out of style. Quick, in the doorway. Oh, never mind. She's gone into the store.
How did she come out in this pouring rain?
Try to deny after this that women have a passion for buying clothes.
She left her lapdog in the street.
She's called Maggie. Yeah.
Maggie. Then another dog joined her.
Hello, Maggie.
Hello, Fidel.
Well, I'll be damned. Talking.
Shame on you, Maggie. You haven't written me. Oh, I've been sick, Fidel.
What the devil is going on? Dogs can't talk.
No, sorry to hear that, Maggie. Well, drop a line soon. I've got to run.
Dogs can't talk. They can't.
Oh, it's not so unusual. The world has seen similar occurrences. In England, a fish broke surface and uttered a couple of words.
Well, I've never heard of a dog that could run.
Oh, of course, not only gentlemen can write. Correctly, anyway.
It was all very surprising. But I must confess.
Gribbling shopkeepers.
Lately I have been hearing things and seeing things that no one else does.
But that's no sort of writing.
Anyhow, I follow the women and their dog through the rain.
No commas, no periods.
I recognized the house they entered.
Terrible spelling.
They went up to the fifth floor. Well, good. I wouldn't go in now. I'd make a note of the place. And wait for the first up. October 4th. Today is Wednesday, and that's why I was at our director's home, in his study. I came in early and sharpened all the quills. Ah, our director must be a very brilliant man. His study is crammed with bookcases, such erudition all over the place. What importance shines in his eyes.
Quick,
what?
The door. Huh? The director, stand up, have the documents ready.
No. It's...
Oh, like a swan. And when she looks at me, it's like the sun.
Hasn't Papa been in here?
Oh, what a voice. A canary, an absolute canary.
Hasn't Papa been in here?
Oh, ma'am, don't have me put to death. But if you do decide that I must die, let it be by your own aristocratic little hand.
Hasn't Papa been in here?
No, ma'am.
Oh, well, thank you.
Oh. At home that night, I lay on my bed most of the time. Then I copied an excellent poem.
Without you, 1 hour crept slowly like a year.
Like a year.
Is my life worthwhile? I wept. When you're not here.
Yes.
Sounds like Pushkin.
Sounds like. I put on my overcoat and walked over to the director's house. And waited by the gate for quite a while to see whether she wouldn't come out and get into her carriage. But she didn't. November 6th. I don't know what's wrong with the chief of my division. Well, for instance,
yes,
for instance, when I arrived at the office...
I quite agree. Now then, what I want to know is what's the matter with you?
Oh, what do you mean, nothing's the matter with me?
Oh, come now, try to understand. Aren't you over 40?
Yes.
Yes, well, isn't it time for you to wise up a little?
No.
Everybody knows what you're up to. Everybody knows you're trying to make the director's daughter.
But...
you. Ha! Just look at yourself. Look, look, what are you? Nothing, absolutely nothing. You haven't a penny to your name. Look in the mirror. Look at yourself.
Yeah.
You haven't a chance in the world.
Stop, stop. What do you know? What do you know? Oh, I can see through you. You're jealous.
Jealous?
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 And then you begin to notice the way the director has been favoring me lately.
No.
And who are you anyway? A divisional chief. So what? I can be promoted too. I'm only 42, an age when one's career is just beginning.
Yes.
I'll go higher than you yet. I'll go higher than you yet. And God willing, very, very, very much higher. I'll have a social position beyond your dreams. You think you're the only one in the world to have dignity? Give me a coat. Give me a coat and tie like yours, and you wouldn't be worthy to polish my boots, not my boots.
And what, my good man, will you use for money?
My lack of means. That's the only trouble. That's the only trouble. November 8th. I went to the theater. There was a vaudeville show full of amusing things. Amusing things. Making fun of everybody, even lawyers. So outspoken. I wondered how it got past the censors. It said plainly that merchants swindle everybody and that we all need protection from the newspaper men. Playwrights write very amusing things nowadays. I love going to the theater. As soon as I get a few cents, I can't help myself. One actress sang really well. What did it remind me of? Yeah. Who? Yes, oh, what a rogue I am. Well, never mind, never mind. November 9th. Today I sat in the director's study and sharpened 23 quills. Ah, how brilliant he must be. How I'd like to have a closer look at these people, see how they live, all their subtle innuendos and courtly jokes. Sometimes the door is open and I can see into their drawing room. Oh, you should see how it's decorated. Mirrors, mirrors, mirrors. Fine pieces of porcelain. How I'd like to see into her room. Oh, her boudoir. All those little jars and bottles standing there amidst the sort of flowers one doesn't dare breathe on. There's the dress she's thrown off, looking like. Here. Ah, miracles, miracles. To see the little stool upon which her delicate foot descends when she emerges from bed. And see how an incredibly fine, immaculate stocking is pulled up her leg. Oh, then that stupid lapdog came into the room. Oh, Maggie, Maggie, well, little Maggie. Listen, Maggie, we're alone now. We're alone now, and I'll even lock the door so that no one will see us. Maggie, tell me everything you know about your mistress. What's she like? What's she like and everything? I swear I won't repeat a thing, not a thing. Oh, But the silly little mutt ran off as if she didn't understand what I was saying. She knew. And dogs can talk. Most of the time, they just choose not to. Because they're stubborn. Well, anyway, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to that house and find Fidel. And get my hands on those letters Maggie's been writing to her. Yes, that's what I'm going to do. November 12th. At 2 p.m., I went out determined to find Fidel and question her. I found the house. I found the house and went upstairs.
Yes?
Excuse me. Do you have a dog by the name of Fidel?
Yes, why?
I want to have a talk with her.
What?
I said I want to have a talk with your dog.
What?
The girl was stupid. I could see from the start how stupid she was. Oh, there's the mutt. Now then.
Get out. Leave her alone.
Oh, you repulsive little creature. Bite me, will you? There's your basket. Just what I'm looking for. And underneath. Underneath in the straw. What do I find? The letters. I knew it. The letters.
You're mad. Get out before I call the police.
Now at last, I'll find everything out. All about these intrigues and plots. Oh, plots. I'll find out all the little wheels and springs at the bottom of the matter. These letters. They will explain everything. Oh, dogs are a clever race. They know all about intrigues. Everything is bound to be in the letters. But it was too dark when I got home. I can't read too well by candlelight. So I lay on my bed and waited until morning. November 13th. Let's see now. This letter here looks quite legible. Though there is something canine about the handwriting. Dear... Fidel.
Dear Fidel, I'm very glad we have decided to write to each other.
Spelling is very good. It's even punctuated correctly. This is considerably better than our divisional chief can do, though he claims to have gone to some university or other. Well, let's see further on.
I believe that sharing feelings and impressions with another is one of the main blessings in life.
The thought is stolen from a work translated from the German. The author's name escapes me now.
I speak from experience. My young mistress, whom her papa called Sophie, is crazy about me.
Oh, Sophie. Never mind.
Papa often pets me, too. I drink tea and coffee with cream. Oh, I must tell you, my dear, that I am not in the least tempted by the bones Fido chews on in the kitchen. I only like the bones of game. And even then, only if the marrow hasn't been sucked out by someone else.
What's this all about? What rubbish? As though there weren't more interesting things to write about. Let's see the next page. There may be something less stupid here.
Now I'll tell you with pleasure what goes on in this household.
My mistress,
Sophie. She's always very happy when she's going to leave for a ball, but is always very irritable while she's getting dressed for it. You know, my dear, I personally can see no pleasure in going to a ball. Something usually returns home from balls at 6 a.m. And I can tell by her pale and emaciated features that the poor thing hasn't been given a bite to eat. I confess, I could never lead such a life. If I had to go without gaming sauce or chicken wing stews, I don't know what would become of me.
The style is very jerky. You can see that it's not written by a man. She starts off all right and then she lapses into dogginess. Well, let's see another letter. This one looks rather long. No date.
Oh, my dear, how strongly I feel the approach of spring. My heart beats as though I were waiting for something. In my ears, there's a constant buzz. Very often I listen so intently behind doors that I raise my front paw. And confidentially, I have plenty of suitors. Oh, you should have seen the dashing young lover that came jumping over the fence into our courtyard. His name is Trevor. special. And he has such a nice face.
Oh, damn it. What rubbish this is. How much of our letters is going to fill up with such stupid stuff? I'm after people, not dogs. I need spiritual food, and I'm served these inanities. Well, let's skip a page. Maybe we'll find something more interesting.
Sophie was sitting at the table sewing something. Suddenly, the manservant came in and announced someone. Show him in, Sophie said. She hugged me hard and murmured, "Oh, Maggie, darling, if only you knew who that is. He's a guard officer. His hair is black, and his eyes are so dark and so light at the same time, like fire." And Sophie rushed out. A minute later, a young officer with black side whiskers appeared. He went to the mirror and smoothed his hair. Then he looked around the room. I growled a little and settled down by my window. Soon, Sophie came back, greeted him gaily, while I pretended to be busy looking out of the window. In fact, however, I turned my head sideways a little so that I could catch what they said. You cannot imagine, Fidel, dear, the silliness of that conversation. Oh, no, I said to myself, this officer doesn't compare to treasure. Heavens, what a difference. Really a tremendous difference. I wonder what she finds in her officer. What on earth can she admire in him?
Yes, here I tend to agree. Something seems wrong. It is quite unbelievable that this officer should have swept her off her feet. Well, let's see here.
If she likes the officer, I think she'll soon be liking the civil service clerk who sits in Papa's study. That one, my dear, is a real scarecrow. He looks a bit like a turtle caught in a bag.
Which clock can that be?
He has a funny name, and he's always sitting sharpening quills. The hair on his head is like straw. Papa sends him on errands like a servant.
That filthy little car seems to be trying to get even. Why is my hair like straw?
Sophie can hardly control her laughter when she sees him.
You wretched, lying little dog! What a filthy, poisonous tongue! As if I didn't know, it's all your jealousy! I know whose trick these are, too. I recognize the hand of our divisional chief here. For some reason, that man has sworn undying hatred for me. He's trying to harm me. Yes, he is! He's trying to harm me! Harm me every bit of the day and night. Oh, still, let's see. One more letter. It may make it clear.
My dear Fidel, forgive me for not writing to you all this time. I've been going around in absolute ecstasy. I agree without reservation with the philosopher who said that love is a second life.
Love is a second life.
Moreover, a lot of things are changing in our soul. The officer comes here every day now. Sophie is madly in love with you.
Papa
is very gay. I even heard Gregory say that the wedding is close at hand. Because Papa always wanted to see Sophie married to an army officer with a brilliant career ahead of him.
No, I can't go on. High official, senior officer, they get the best things in this world. You discover a crumb of happiness. You reach out for it, and then along comes a high official or an officer and snatches it away. Oh, damn it. I would so much like to become a high official myself. Not just to obtain a hand in marriage, either, no. No, I'd like to be a high official just so that I could watch them jump around on my benefit. I'd listen for a while to their courtly jokes and innuendos, and then I'd tell them what they could do with themselves. Oh, it hurts, though. It hurts. Oh, damn it. I saw those little dogs' letters to spread. December 3rd. Impossible lies. There can't be a wedding.
Well, he has a commission in the guards.
So what? Does he have a third eye in the middle of his bonnet or a golden nose? Why am I a clerk? Why should I be a clerk?
Maybe you only appear to be a clerk. Maybe you're a general.
Maybe I don't really know who I am.
You know, there are plenty of instances in history when somebody quite ordinary, not necessarily an aristocrat, some middle-class person, even a peasant, suddenly turns out to be a public figure, maybe even the ruler of a country. Yes. Now, if a peasant can turn into someone so important, where are the limits to the possibilities for a man of breeding?
I can see myself entering a room in a general's uniform.
Yes.
An epaulette on my right shoulder, an epaulette on my left shoulder, a blue ribbon across my chest.
Yes.
How that would be.
Well, you can't be promoted to anything like that overnight.
What I'd like to know is, why am I a clock?
Yes, why are you a clock?
Why precisely a clock? Why precisely a clock? December 5th. I read all the papers this morning.
Strange things are happening in Spain.
I don't understand it at all.
They write that the throne has been vacated.
Vacated?
Yes, and that the ranking grandees are having difficulty in selecting an heir.
Ah, an heir?
It seems there's discontent.
Sounds very strange to me. How can a throne be empty?
They say that some doña may accede.
Doña? It's absolutely impossible.
Of course it's impossible. A doña can't accede to a throne. A king should sit on a throne.
Of course, a king should sit on a throne.
They say there is no king.
Well, that's impossible. It's impossible that there should be no king. There must be a king.
Well, he might be hidden away somewhere. In anonymity.
Ah, yes.
It's even possible that he's around here. I mean, he'd be forced to remain in hiding for some kind of reason.
The office, but various considerations held me back. I couldn't get those Spanish affairs out of my head. How can a doña possibly become a ruler? They won't allow it.
Of course they won't allow it in the first place. England won't stand for it. And then they must remember the political situation of the rest of Europe, the Austrian Emperor.
Our Tsar. I must admit, I was so worried and hurt by these events, I couldn't do anything all day long. After dinner, I walked the streets. Uphill. Downhill. Came across nothing of interest. Then mostly lay on my bed and thought about the Spanish question. Year 2000, April 43. This is a day of great jubilation. Spain has a king.
They found him?
I am the king.
Oh, no.
I discovered it today. It all came to me in a flash.
Well, it's incredible ever to have imagined being a civil service clerk.
How could such a crazy idea ever have entered my head?
You would thank God no one thought of slapping you into a lunatic asylum.
Well, now I see everything clearly. But what was happening before? Things loomed at me out of a fog. But now...
Oh, wouldn't you say that all troubles stem from the misconception that human brains are located in the head?
Yes.
Well, they're not. Human brains are blown in by the winds from somewhere around the Caspian Sea.
Oh! Keep away! Keep away, you're mad!
Mama was the first to whom I revealed my identity. When she heard I was the King of Spain, she fell off her hands, almost died in terror.
Silly woman, she'd never seen a King of Spain before.
Oh, calm yourself, Mama, calm yourself. I can assure you of my royal favor. Come now, bygones are bygones.
The masses are so ignorant. She's probably frightened because she thinks that all kings of Spain are like Philip II.
Martha, I'm not at all like Philip II.
Oh, the hell with it.
Right, the hell with it. There. I didn't go to the office. I'll never go there again. I'll never again copy those dreadful documents. October 86. Between day and night.
Today the divisional chief sent someone to make you go to the office.
Yes.
You went?
Well, just for the laugh.
The divisional chief expected you to come apologizing to him for not being there for 3 weeks?
Yes.
Did you apologize?
I did not. I looked at him with indifference.
And what did you think as you sat in your usual place and looked around at all these scribbling rabble?
Oh, I thought that if only they knew who was sitting there among them. What a fuss they make.
They gave you some papers to abstract. Did you do the work?
I didn't even stir.
And when the director came in, what did the rest do?
They jumped up trying to be noticed.
Did you jump up?
Never. Who says I should get up for him? He's an old cork, just a cork, the kind they used to stop up a bottle. That's all he is.
But the funniest thing of all...
Even when they gave me a paper to sign. Yeah. Do you know where they expected me to sign it?
In the corner, under clerk such and such.
Yes, imagine.
What did you do?
I signed it in the space reserved for the director.
The
very one.
What name did you sign?
I signed Ferdinand the
Eighth. You did.
Yes, I did.
And what happened?
Awed silence. But I merely waved my hand and said graciously, dispense with the manifestation of allegiance, and walked out of the room.
And what did you do then?
I went straight to the director's.
Was he at home?
No, he wasn't.
And you then proceeded straight to her boudoir?
Oh, she was sitting in front of her mirror. And when she saw me...
Did you tell her that you were the King of Spain?
Certainly not. I simply told her, Madam, you cannot imagine the happiness awaiting you. And despite all our enemies' intrigues, we will soon be together.
Get out, you idiot!
Women are such perfidious things, really.
I never really understand them. Never really understand them. Who is woman really in love with?
The devil, of course.
Devil.
Of course. You can see it. Just look over there. Do you see in the frontier of the boxes?
She's raising her loan yet.
Yes.
She's looking at the fat man over there with the star.
No, she isn't. Nothing of the sort. She's staring at the devil.
Where?
There, hiding behind the fat man's back. Look, he's hidden himself in the star. He's beckoning to her with his finger.
She'll marry him, too.
Of course she will. And as for the rest of them bootlickers, you know what they all really want?
Annuities.
Annuities. More annuities. You know, some patriots, they'd sell their mother and father and their God for money. The strutting betrayers of Christ. And all this crazy ambition, this vanity. You know where it comes from?
The little bubble under the tongue.
Of course. Tiny worm, about the size of a pinhead in it.
I think it's all the work of a barber on peace.
Of course it is.
I don't remember his name.
You know who the moving force behind all that is?
The Sultan of Turkey.
Of course it is.
I'll bet he pays the barber to spread Mohammedanism all over the world.
Of course he does.
They say that in France already the majority of the people have embraced the Mohammedan faith.
Of course they have.
That was the first half of The Diary of a Madman by Nikolai Gogol. Adapted and produced at Pacifica Radio in 1963 by Eric Bauersfeld. You heard him as the madman, with Bernard Mays as the alter ego. The women and dogs in their life were played by Pat Franklin. Music was arranged by Charles Shear, with technical production by John Whiting. Special production for this series was by Jim McKee. On our next visit, we will hear what happens to our madman as he falls ever deeper into his delusions. Well, that's all for now. Come and visit our archives again for another tale from the shadows. Real soon.